Hey, this is Jeff Pilson of End Machine, Black Swan, Revolution Saints, Foreigner, Doc and Dio, you name it, I've been in it. And you're listening to Thunder Underground.
Welcome to episode 391 of the Thunder Underground podcast. Trent here as always. And this week is great because Jeff Pilson is here on the podcast for the first time. As you heard right there in that intro, Jeff has his hands in a lot of different things. Past things, present things, and future things, and we're going to talk about all of those here coming up very shortly with Jeff. A lot of great music that this man has been a part of, a lot of great music that hasn't come out that is going to be great because we've heard a couple singles, and of course, future music from great bands. You know, it's all discussed coming up here very shortly. But before we jump into that, I need to let you know who sponsors this podcast. And that would be Sunset Tattoo, a tattoo shop located in Midtown Tulsa. Their tattoos are done good and proper, they're state licensed, and they are mother approved. Over 30 years of experience from Jake Thompson and his crew over there. You can call, message, to set up an appointment to talk about what work you're looking to have done. You can also walk in. There's tons of photos to check out on their social medias. Facebook and Instagram are both Sunset Tattoo Tulsa. Specialize in all types of styles. I know several people that have work done by them. There's been a lot of musicians throughout the years that have had work done with Sunset Tattoo. I've personally had work done as well, and I will be very shortly once again here in the next week or two, so be on the lookout for a photo of that on the Thunder Underground socials. But in the meantime, if you're looking to have tattoo work done or you know someone that is, hit up Sunset Tattoo and tell them you heard about them right here on Thunder Underground. We've also got DEB Concerts, a promoter based out of the Tulsa area, who for the past many, many years has brought a plethora of great artists to the Tulsa area, including bands that probably wouldn't have come here otherwise at the club level, like Saxon, Last in Line, Junkyard, Winger. The list is great and long. Keeps getting longer, and I just mentioned Last in Line. They are returning on April 6th. It's a Saturday night. Hey, one of those members has been on this podcast before, and that member is the legendary Vivian Campbell, who is also in Def Leppard, and of course was in Dio, which is how he's in Last in Line. Guess who has also been in Dio? Jeff Pilson, the star of this podcast episode. And guess what? He also produced Last in Line. We got to tie all this all together, right? Last in Line will be in Tulsa at the Cox Business Center on April 6th, but guess what? They won't be alone. They'll be co-headlining with the immortal Lita Ford. Don't want to miss this one, so check it out. Hit up DEB Concerts. For more info, follow them on our socials. Facebook, Instagram, and X are all DEB Concerts. They also book the Roadhouse stage at Rocklahoma every year. There's always great acts on that. They also book regional acts on that stage. So if you are a band that would love to play Rocklahoma, I don't know what the time window is, but it could be running out because they opened the window for this like a month ago. But hit up DEB Concerts on their socials to find out if you can still submit. But either way, Rocklahoma every year, that announcement should be coming in the next month or so. So we'll be talking about all that with DEB Concerts. Doug usually pops on the podcast every year to talk about the Rocklahoma lineup as well. But until then, follow them on their socials and tell them you heard about them right here. All right, before I talk to Jeff Pilson, I want to mention a couple things that have recently happened on this podcast, which would be some interviews that have been recently recorded that I'm pretty happy to announce. Recently, I already announced that the keyboardist and producer, Kevin, from the band Mirith, an amazing progressive metal band out of Tunisia, he goes into great detail on writing, orchestration, you know, classical music, Middle Eastern music, all kinds of stuff that ties into their progressive metal. So that's a very interesting episode. I learned a lot personally with that one. I also just recorded one with Keith Wallen. He is the guitarist for Breaking Benjamin. You know, there's a stark contrast in styles right there between those two artists I just mentioned. But that's what we do on this podcast. You know, throughout the years, we've had everyone from Trevor of the Black Dahlia Murder to Vanilla Ice. So, you know, we don't discriminate on the genres around here. Keith Wallen has solo music out over the past decade. He's got a new one coming out. Great stuff. The guy's a phenomenal songwriter. If you dive into his solo music, you'll hear it firsthand. And he's also wrote with tons of modern hard rock and metal artists throughout the years. We talk about all that. And of course, talk about Breaking Benjamin as well. That'll be coming soon. And then the quote-unquote headliner of this talk, or the coup de grace, I don't know. Living Color. Two words I've wanted to say on this podcast in conjunction with a guest since Jason and I started this podcast 9 years ago. You'll rehear me say that on the episode, but I say Living Color and not just an individual because both Corey Glover and Vernon Reed joined me recently in Oklahoma City. We sat down on their tour bus to talk about all kinds of stuff. New music, old music, politics, climate change, you name it. It's Vernon Reed and Corey Glover, so you know it's not just going to be surface BS. It's going to be the real deal. And I'm super excited to get that one out. Can't tell you how cool that was, what an honor that was to be able to talk to not just two guys that I've been a big fan of since I was a kid, but two guys that are legitimately legends, rock and roll icons, at the top of their game at their prospective instruments. You know, it's, I can go on and on. You'll hear me go on that episode. I always try, when it's an artist that I'm a huge fan of, to not fanboy out on the episode. And of course I did not in the interview, but I probably will in that intro. But until then, one more. There's one more that I'm recording tomorrow. And as always, I do not announce things until they've been recorded. I will tell you this, that the artist that I'm scheduled to interview, I've actually mentioned the band name earlier. The artist that I'm scheduled to interview is not in this specific band anymore, but they were in a major band from the 80s, a band that is a legendary band from the 80s that has a couple songs that even people that don't listen to rock music are familiar with. That's how big this band is and was. The member of this band is a legendary guitarist. He is one of several legendary guitarists who have played with this band throughout the years. So that kind of narrows it down to not many, because there's not many bands that have had a long list of legendary guitarists in their band. And this isn't Megadeth. Several members of Megadeth have been on this podcast, but it's not that band. It's not Ozzy, who has also had several legendary guitarists. Speaking of, one of those legendary guitarists was just on this podcast a couple weeks ago, and that'd be Gus G. So check that one out if you have not yet. But in the meantime, we're going to talk to Jeff Pilson. Jeff Pilson took the time to join me on Zoom so we could talk about a plethora of music that Jeff's involved in. First thing first being Revolution Saints. You've heard that name on this podcast many times over the past few years. First, notably, because about a year ago, this time, I believe it was actually March of last year, I need to recheck, but Dean Castronovo was on this podcast. And that is one of my favorite episodes ever. You know, we just took a deep dive into all kinds of stuff throughout Dean's career. Got over an hour, roughly, I think, talking to Dean. And previous to that, you know, Jason and I had talked about Revolution Saints just because, you know, we really dug this band. As Jeff will point out here in a bit, you know, it's a great vehicle to, you know, to showcase what Dean can do as a vocalist, besides what, you know, we all know that he's a world-class drummer. But unless, you know, you really pay attention, or you haven't, if you haven't seen Journey Live, you might not know that the man is a world-class singer that very much fits into that Steve Perry vein and does it extremely well. It's great stuff. They've got 5 albums now. Revolution Saints is on their second iteration, I guess you want to call it. The first 3 albums featured Dean, along with Doug Aldrich and Jack Blades. And then once they kind of regrouped before the 4th album, after a slight bit of time off, it's now Dean with Joel Hoekstra and Jeff Pilson. Throughout the five albums that we've got, Alessandro Davicio has been the writer, co-writer, I believe, on most of this. I'm not sure how huge involvement, you know, Dean is in that, but Jeff will talk about that here in a bit as well, that dynamic might be shifting on the next album. But with Jeff and the band, we now have two albums out for you to hear. Eagle Flight came out about a year ago, and then Against the Winds, which is out now, came out about a month ago. Check these albums out if you're into melodic rock, you're into AOR, you're into just, you know, good fucking rock and roll. I mean, is the best way to put it. You know, you don't want to pigeonhole things into a genre. And while the first three albums were very Journey-esque, while this still has that feel to it, it's a little bit heavier, a little bit, you know, maybe, I wouldn't say it's not dark, but it's a little bit darker than the first three. They kind of shifted away from that just very Journey-specific sound. While it still has those elements, you know, there's a lot more going on. And I'm sure, you know, if Jeff ends up in, you know, being involved in the writing process moving forward, then that should, we should get even more great things from Revolution Saints. This is one of those bands that, you know, was kind of put together by Frontier Records, and so many of the bands that Frontier Records have done that with have just been studio projects. And while this, that's basically what this has been, with just a few live shows here or there, you know, the hope is that it will turn into something more, because most of these bands don't put out five albums, let alone, you know, we've got a sixth one coming here next year probably sometime. So check out Revolution Saints if you have not. We've got the End Machine, who is about to put out their third album. This will come out, actually, if you're listening to this when it drops, this will come out tomorrow. March 8th. The third album from the End Machine will be out. If you're not familiar with the End Machine, you need to get familiar as well. Quick backstory on this one. Same kind of situation put together as a, it's basically, it was the three original members of Dokken without Don Dokken. It was put together as a Dokken for the modern age. That's something else that, you know, Jeff's going to talk about here in a bit. You know, we had Mick Brown, George Lynch, and Jeff Pilson with Robert Mason on vocals. Robert Mason has been on this podcast before as well, so check that out. Robert Mason is a phenomenal freaking vocalist. You know, he kicks ass on these two End Machine records. He kicks ass on the Warrant music he's made. He kicked ass with Lynch Mob now 32 years ago. I believe that was 92. The second Lynch Mob album, Tangled in Reins, was where most of us learned about Robert Mason. I'm not going to ramble too much about Robert Mason because he's not in the band anymore. The third album now features Girish, exactly sure how to pronounce his last name, part of him, or I should have like looked that up. But anyway, Girish and the Chronicles is this band that's been around several years now. I just discovered them in this past year. Loved the band. And then when I found out he was in the End Machine, I was super stoked, because I'm like, if we've got to replace Robert Mason, it's cool. They replaced him with someone a little harder edged vocal-wise. And Jeff goes into that as well. You know, a younger guy kind of bringing a shot of life to the music, the style of music that we all know and love. So really looking forward to what's coming out. They've got two singles out now, but by the time you're hearing this, the album's probably already out, so check that out. Really looking forward to seeing where this goes with Girish and the band. And of course, you can never go wrong with George Lynch guitar work. You know, I mean, the guy is in a league of his own. There's very few people that, you know, are on that level. Then we've got Black Swan. Another great band that I believe, you know, was put together in the same sense of those Frontier, you know, the Frontier Records bands, but this one to me seems more like a cohesive unit, real band, you know, because I mean, Jeff even talks about that this, you know, like Reb Beach coming over, you know, them spending a couple weeks just writing for the album. So this is like, you know, while it is mainly a studio thing because all these guys have their main projects, this one is more like what you expect from a side project, you know, a band of four guys, like a super group, quote unquote. You've got Robin McCauley on vocals. You've got Jeff Pilson on bass, Reb Beach on guitar, and Matt Starr on drums. If you're not familiar with Matt Starr, he's been in a plethora of things. A lot of session work as well. Notably, he was recently the drummer in Mr. Big after Pat Torpey passed away. He's not currently, but he was for a few years. He's in Black Swan, which also features two men who have been on this podcast before. Robin McCauley has been on here four times, and Reb Beach has been on here once. Reb Beach, you know, is on my list of my 10 favorite guitarists, and Robin McCauley is on my list of probably my 10 favorite vocalists. And, you know, and Jeff Pilson is right on that list for bass players as well. So this band's kind of like a tailor-made for someone like me, I guess. And the first two albums are freaking phenomenal. I'm using these adjectives too much. Am I blowing smoke up people's asses? No, I'm just saying this because it's what I feel. I absolutely love Black Swan, and I can't wait till a third album comes. You'll hear more about that as well. On top of all this, Jeff Pilson is in Foreigner. He's been in Foreigner now for 20 years. He's been the band leader for quite a while. He's been an integral part of keeping this band alive, keeping the music alive. You know, they tour every year throughout the summer. Can't miss them. They're always doing, usually doing package tours. Not always, you know, they do a lot of, you know, casinos, arenas, theaters, that kind of stuff. But this summer they're doing a package tour with Styx and John Waite. We talk about all that. Talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nomination, all that great stuff. You know, I don't need to spend 10 minutes telling you what we talked about when we can just listen to it, but I just kind of wanted to give you a little background on these specific three side projects that, you know, that I'm talking about with Jeff Pilson. If you're listening to this, obviously you know that he's an original core member of Dokken, you know, was there throughout the heyday. And then, of course, you know, as Dokken has continued throughout the years, it's been Don with other musicians who are not named George Lynch, Jeff Pilson, or Mick Brown. Of course, they had their reunion, I don't know how many years ago that was now, probably 7, 8 years ago, or maybe not even that long, I don't know, but they, you know, had the reunion in Japan, and they, you know, released that officially, so you can check that out if you hadn't seen it yet. But all that being said, I'm super happy to have Jeff Pilson on here. So let's jump into this episode and hear what Jeff has to say. I just saw you guys had some really good chart numbers with like the hard music charts and new music, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the response has been phenomenal. Couldn't be happier.
Does that surprise you at this stage in your career to have Billboard chart numbers, or is that something you even think about?
I don't think about it much, is the honest answer. But when I see it, it's nice, you know, because I'm sort of kind of, it's like it hasn't been part of the equation for a while. So seeing that is a nice thing, yes.
Yeah, for sure. Had you listened to Revolution Saints at all before you joined the band?
Well, I'd heard, you know, the songs that they had done videos for, sure. I mean, okay. I didn't listen to the records all the way through or anything, but I definitely was aware of them and knew the style. And then when they asked me to join, of course, I did a little checking, you know.
How were you approached? Was it by Dean or was it by Serafino? Or like how'd that whole process go?
Serafino. Okay. Basically they just asked if I'd be interested, and you know, working with Dean and Joel, no brainer.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like once you two joined the band on Eagle Flight that the sound kind of took a shift slightly heavier than the previous albums, a little bit less Journey-esque. Do you think that's from you and Joel you're playing, or was that kind of an intentional shift?
Well, you know, the songs were already in place before I joined. I think Joel had something to do with some of the songs on Eagle Flight. But because the songs were in place, I don't think the shift, any shift was necessarily because of us, maybe a little bit because of Joel. I think, you know, there's a 10, I mean, we are actually all three of us, Dean, Joel, and I are all heavy rock musicians. We all come, I mean, you know, Dean comes from thrash metal, you know? I mean,
Right.
it's like we all have a heavy thing in us. Maybe us joining the band and our playing makes it a little bit heavier, but I don't think that's a lot. I think a lot of it was Alessandro's writing, that just kind of what he happened to write for Eagle Flight and this record. Next record, we're hoping to get the band involved in the writing. We'll see, which would be very, very, very cool. And but I mean, in my mind, it is kind of a heavier journey in a lot of ways, because the focus of the band is Dean's voice, and Dean's voice isn't, you know, you can't help, it's going to remind you a little bit of Journey sometimes, although I think he very much stands on his own as his own vocalist. And because, like I say, we are heavier rock musicians, I think it tends to be a little bit heavier. Was it intentional? I don't really know. I think it's more natural.
Jumped out to me because I mean I've always thought Joel, you know, definitely is a heavy guitar player, but I've kind of in my mind Doug Aldridge was always a heavier guitar player, so that's kind of why
And
it caught me
heavier
off
than
guard.
Joel? I don't know. I mean, I
Yeah.
think they're both kind of, you know, same ballpark heaviness wise.
But yeah, mentioning, you know, Dean's vocals, I mean, being a multi-instrumentalist yourself, like where do you think this guy stands in the grand scheme of like excelling at two, you know, two separate things?
Well, I mean, for that alone, it's pretty phenomenal. You don't find many people who are as great a drummer as Dean is, which is, you know, top of the heap, world-class drummer. With I think as a vocalist, he ranks in there with anybody else at the top. You know, I think he's a world-class vocalist that needs to have a vehicle to demonstrate and, you know, get his voice out there. And you know, I'm so glad that the album is getting such a positive response, and that the band in general is getting a positive response, because I think it is a great vehicle for Dean's voice, which, again, as I say, that's kind of the focus of the band. So yes, I think he deserves to be up there with all the other greats.
I mean, to achieve that, do you think the band needs to play as many live shows as possible? I know it's not really the type of band that, you know, was built for that, but I had Dean on last year and he mentioned that was really the hope, is to make it more than just a studio project. I know you guys did like one show last year or whatever, but.
Yes, that's a hope. I would love to see that happen. You know, whenever I talk about this, I have to put the caveat in there that the logistics and the scheduling, everything involved in putting a band out there live, is very, very difficult when we all have so many things going on, and especially the fact that, you know, we have to make a living from our day jobs. You know,
Yeah.
me and Forner kind of have a little bit of a priority here.
Right.
So, but having said that, the desire is there. I'd love to see us do some live shows. I don't know how much that would have to do with changing anybody's perception on Dean. I'm sure if they saw him live, they're going to go, wow, he's great. But I mean, hearing him on record, I think so too. So I don't know if I think that would help. And I think it would certainly give the band more legs if we could go play live. But we'll see. I mean, again, it's a difficult thing. And, you know, maybe someday a song comes out in a movie or something. You never know what could cause a breakthrough. So, you know, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed, hoping for the best and delivering the best music we can.
When I spoke to Dean, it was right at the time that Eagle Flight came out, and he had mentioned that both Against the Winds and the third album was already written. Is this, I mean, has the third album already been recorded, or is that something you
No,
still?
no.
Okay.
The third album with us, no.
Yeah, that's what I
We
meant. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, no, we still have to write for, there's still some writing for that. Like I say, I'm hoping the band gets a little more involved in the writing. But even if not, I mean, Alessandro does such a great job. The guy's a songwriting machine. So,
Yeah.
you know, either way, we're going to be covered. But yeah, I mean, wouldn't it be nice to get the band in there, get a little bit of our, I just to get a live band feel in it. Somehow involved in the writing process, I think would be very, very cool.
You know, as a musician that's been doing this for a long time and obviously had tons of your own music out there, was it kind of weird or odd to step into a project where you didn't have any involvement with the writing or even production?
Yeah.
Just kind of playing.
Weird maybe, but it was actually a nice relief and a nice change of pace. I love producing the records I do. I really do. And it is a labor of love. I do not do it for the money. But it's great to also be in a situation where I just get to be the bass player. For one, I have limitless trust in Alessandro as a producer, and what he sends me, you know, and he trusts me on the bass. You know, he says do your thing. We want you to do your thing. But having said that, I just go on instinct when I do the bass tracks, and play what I think is right. And it's kind of nice to only have that to concentrate on. It's a fabulous feeling. I don't get to do that often, so it's nice.
Well, I mean, you answered it slightly in that, but my next question was, whenever you approach something, when you're not the producer, if you're just playing bass, do you approach it different? I mean, you like you said, he kind of gave you freedom, but are you harder on yourself if you're producing than you are if you're just playing, or how's that whole process work, or is it the same thing? Yeah.
Well, it also depends on if I'm working with somebody, you know, one-on-one, or in the case of Revolution Saints, I do the bass tracks on my own. So I'm sort of producing my own bass tracks, if you know what I mean. I'm as hard on myself as I am in any other situation where I'm playing bass, even if it's a band I'm producing. So in that sense, it's not really, my approach is no different. I always, whenever I'm playing bass, it's what feels good, what makes the song, what fits the song correctly, and can I be as interesting as possible in spot? Do I have spots where I can, shine or be a little more interesting, a little more melodic? But my approach almost never changes, because that's how I play bass. I play bass according to the song. And I think that's why Alessandro trusts me. You know, he's like, okay, you know what to do, play the bass.
Well, we've mentioned Alessandro several times, and like you mentioned, he's an amazing writer. Like, it just kind of baffles me that, like, all the albums that Frontiers have put out that he's had a hand in, just like how great consistently this guy's writing is. I mean, is that crazy to see up front, like in person?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's a songwriting machine. It's amazing. Yes, it's very, very impressive to watch. I think the world of that guy. I think he's a real gem.
Like you mentioned, from the production standpoint, you've been doing that for quite a while, but do you still pick up things from a guy like that, or?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I mean, I try and pick up from everybody. I've been very fortunate. I've gotten to work with, Roy Thomas Baker, Michael Wagner, Wynn Davis, Keith Olsen, all these great producers over the years. And of course I'm a sponge. You know, when I go in the studio and I'm watching somebody else, I love to, Mick Jones, being around Mick Jones, I learned so much. I try and learn from everybody. Even when I'm just doing tracks, even if I'm doing with young musicians, I can learn something. There's always something to learn, because music, especially music production, is about listening. And, that's your first job, is listen. So when you're listening, hopefully you're learning.
Well, another album you've got coming out very soon is the third In Machine album, and that'll be March 8th. So what led to the change in vocalist, like Robert Mason leaving? I mean, I know he's worked with George for 30 plus years on and off, and with you well, decade plus. So,
yeah. Oh, well, first of all, the change had nothing to do with anything Robert would have done wrong. He didn't do anything wrong. It's not like that. And I like to impress that point strongly, because it's a little bit heartbreaking when you make decisions about changing members that you feel are great. It's a really difficult thing to do. But the label came to us and said, hey, you should check this guy out. Serafino in particular, who's the president of Frontiers, really wanted us to listen to Garish and consider him. And George and I did, and we agreed to try it. And then when the writing happened, it was automatic and amazing. And he turned out to be a great writer, which was a big consideration, because Robert's a great writer. So, but Garish came in, really did the rewriting great, took to rewriting fabulously. And I think, the bottom line is, this music is in his DNA. This is what he grew up on. This is what he loves. This is what he does naturally. So what George and I do naturally is a natural thing for him. And so he fell into place naturally. He didn't have to force anything. I think Robert felt like he had to force things, you know, to make it more Dokken-like. And that felt like going backwards for him. And I understand that. I really do. That's a big thing. I mean, you know, and when you're a writer, and if you're an honest writer, you don't want to repeat yourself and be insincere. With Gerish, it's natural. It's just, it's where he comes from. So for him, it's a great place to fall in. And it just worked out incredibly. And the guys singing, writing, and attitude are A+. We lucked out. Because it's hard to make a change.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I just discovered Garrison at Chronicles like last year. And then just like all of a sudden, you know, he's in the End Machine. I was like, wow. I mean, I'm a big Robert Mason fan, but I'm like, you know, this is, I mean, it works well with the two songs we've heard.
Hear the record. The whole record is really strong, and I'm really proud of it, and I'm really excited about it.
I mean, obviously those two songs will be a great indicator, but what else could someone expect that might shift different from the first couple? Or,
well, wait till they hear the opening track of the record. It's called Black Hole Extinction. It's a really cool song. It's actually, I know it's George and Gerish and my favorite song on the record. It's just such a cool song. So I believe they're going to do some kind of a lyric video for it or something. Anyway, you'll see that. That's something to expect. There's a lot of amazing pieces of music on there. Like I say, I think the whole album stands up as a body of work, and I'm just really excited for people to hear it. It's you know, and when people, I've read some of the comments people say about the first two videos, and when I hear people say it's very you know, they'll say like Dokken but new and improved or something like that. I'm not afraid of that. That's a great thing. That's what we are. So I think people are going to really be pleasantly surprised when they hear it.
I know the whole project kind of what spawned from the Tooth and Nail project you guys started, right? So it's like, obviously it has the Dokken X to it, and I've got, you know, two of the core members, well, three at that time, right? So like, was that always the intention with this band to make it just like, you know, here's what Dokken should sound like this day and age? Or was it just kind of what happens when Jeff and George are together?
Well, kind of a combination. Yeah. I mean, I think in Serafino's mind when he, you know, because it was his idea to put this together. And, you know, he wanted, you know, three guys from Dokken with a different singer. So I think he did very much want to have a Dokken for the modern age. And, you know, yeah, he was somewhat upfront about that, and we didn't have a problem with that. So, I think that was kind of part of the plans. And I think on this record, we really did it in a strong, dynamic, but real and authentic way, which is not easy to achieve. You know, you don't want to redid what you did 30, 40 years ago. But at the same time, if you let what's natural in you, which is what we were doing then, if you let that just come out and take fruit, do what it's going to do, and then put a vocalist on it who really comes from that zone, I think you get a winning combination. And like I say, I'm very excited and proud of the record.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. I mean, another project you've been a part of recently is Black Swan. Is there any chance there's a third album in the work? I mean, in the future on that?
There is indeed. Actually, Red Beach was just here a couple weeks ago, and we're seven songs into the new Black Swan, and I'm very excited about it. And I cannot wait for people to hear it, because we all, like I said, we got a really great head start. It's probably not going to be well into 2025, but there is a Black Swan 3 coming.
Good deal. Yeah, I mean, I've always been a firm believer that Robin McCauley is one of the most underrated singers in rock history.
Ever.
Like,
I totally agree with you, and I couldn't agree more.
Well, you initially worked with him and McCauley Shanker back in the early 90s. Like, did you guys keep in touch throughout all those years? And whenever Black Swan came about, was that kind of rekindling? Or
actually, Robin and I are very, very dear friends. Okay. Very dear. I was the best man at his wedding. When we bonded in MSG and we stayed close for years and forever since. I just really dearly love the guy. I mean, if you've ever met him, he's just the most down-to-earth, wonderful guy you'll ever know. He's great to work with. He's got this amazing voice, and he's also a great writer. I think he's one of the great storytellers in heavy rock. I really do. His stories are fabulous. And when we collaborate, he's just amazing to work with. I love it. And yes, I think he's always been underrated. I think with his solo albums now and some of the Shanker stuff he's doing, people are starting to know him more and more, which I think is great. He's starting to get more visibility. But yeah, man, Robin deserves to be up there with the greats because he is.
Yeah, I've been doing this podcast about 9 years now, and he's been on four times, and he's hands down probably the nicest person I've ever talked to on here.
Yeah, he really is. He's just a great guy.
So what's the writing process with you and Reb and Matt? Like, how does that dynamic work? Do you guys write
Well,
together
generally,
or apart? Like you said, Reb was there a couple weeks ago.
the process generally starts with Reb and I coming up with the music, and you generally Reb comes in and he's got some riffs that he's put down. In some cases, he's got many song parts. Sometimes a lot of it we keep, sometimes a lot of it we change. I mean, it's different every song. But generally what we do is he comes in with I was gonna say a tape, but a flash drive full of some riffs, and we just go one by one and we listen and we go, okay, let's work on that one today. And then, we just work, and we, if it's just the riff that's inspiring us, we'll see where it goes. And we naturally have this wonderful chemistry that just comes up with the parts that are needed. And it's just a wonderful process. I mean, I think Reb enjoys it as much as I do. I just love it. Then when that happens, we send that, whatever it may be. And like I say, sometimes Reb comes in with like a lot of the pieces of the song, and we'll go, yeah, that's great. Or sometimes we start on a riff and we end up changing the whole thing completely. You just never know where it's going to go. But then we send it to Robin, and Robin comes up with the first draft. And sometimes we keep what that is. Sometimes we make changes. It's always different. But yeah, that's pretty much how the process goes. Generally, the vocals are finished off with Robin and I working here together. He'll go out and we'll work on the melodies and lyrics until we know it's right, and then he'll go out and sing it, and he'll kill it.
I mean, between that and the End Machine and Revolution Saints now, like you've got tons of product coming out here over the past several years, and even a guy like George Lynch has two or three albums a year, it seems like, in different projects. Like, is that
Sure.
kind of odd to think about, like this at this stage in your career to be putting out that much product compared to like, the heyday, the early days of being in the business?
Yeah. It's just entirely different. I mean, back in the 80s, you never could have been in this many projects. But we also didn't have the technology to make those kind of records happen remotely, which is part of how we're able to pull it off. When you're working remotely, you can work kind of on your own schedule, and you can, like, for me, I have to be very careful how I schedule my time because I have so many things going on. But working remotely, or should I say, having the ability to work remotely, helps a lot. Again, with M Machine and Black Swan, there is a lot of one-on-one. There is a lot of stuff where, like George and I work together on M Machine. He sits right there and we work together. On Black Swan, Reb's here. Reb comes here, stays here for a week at a time generally, and we work every day. Start at 10 in the morning, go till 8 or 9 at night. When Robin's here, Robin lives not too far from me. So we come and we work together. So there is a lot of one-on-one collaboration. Unfortunately, there's never full band collaboration, which is why it would be so cool if Revolution Saints got to set up in a room and play and see what happens if we start jamming. But when Steve does his drums for M Machine, he's right here. Matt had to do the last record of for Black Swan remotely, and that wasn't my favorite way of doing it, but it worked well. But the first record he was in here, probably this record he'll do them from here, so we'll see. But yes, it's weird because you couldn't have done it in the heyday, but the fact you can do it now, I think, is the bright spot of a very dark turn that the music business has taken. The music business is in an ugly place, but at least, but the bright side is you get all these wonderful musical projects out of it that come up with some fabulous music. You wouldn't have gotten that many years ago. You would have gotten one band at a time. So a lot less great music. It's just the bands were able to focus more and spend more time with each band. But I mean, I've always loved doing multiple things because I have so many different loves of music. So I love getting different areas. I love to be able to experience different areas of music. But yes, it's a bright spot. It's a great thing to have, only made possible by the technology. But it is, like I say, it's the flip side of what is a very dark turn in the music business that does not have the infrastructure for a band like a Revolution Saints to just spend, all their time making their records and going out and touring and doing the usual. So it's, take the good with the bad.
As far as what you mentioned a minute ago with recording, whenever you're doing it remotely and not in the same room, do you feel like that loses anything? Because, throughout the years, you always heard
No.
people talk about, the capturing the band together in the studio or whatever. But when I hear the product, like you said, the last End Machine album, the drums sound fucking great. So, I mean, I don't know, like,
Well,
what's that
that's,
balance,
I mean, the object when we're doing it is to achieve that feeling, and we know how to do that. And like with the people that I work with Steve Brown, he knows how to take these tracks that we've done and make it feel like we're playing together. Yes, that's the ideal situation, but that doesn't necessarily yield better results. It can, and there can be magic. Like when I was the first two Last in Line records, Vinny would set up in there with his drums. Vivian would sit here. Vivian and Jimmy or Phil would sit right here and play. And the three of them would play live, and it was incredible. And it really, something magical happened out of that. I wish I got to do that more. But having said that, I think working remotely, when you have the right people who know how to do it, it can yield really amazing results. And it certainly gives you an advantage for songwriting and working on arrangements and doing all the things that we do. Because by the time I do drums on these records, we know where the songs are going to go. Now we can have the drums feel like they need to make the transitions into each section. And that's a big key to the recording process with these projects.
You mentioned Mick Jones earlier, and speaking on Foreigner, like 20 years now for you, was there a point playing live that the songs started to feel like they were your own? Or does it still feel like you're playing songs you grew up on, that kind of thing?
It's funny. I have this wonderful gift in that once I start playing a song, no matter who wrote it, no matter what kind of music it is, even if it's crap, once I start playing it, I don't judge the music. I'm in the moment of playing. And it's got to feel good, I mean, it's got to have the right elements around it, the band has to be good and all that, but when I'm playing, I sort of don't judge, and it doesn't matter whether I wrote it or not. It just doesn't. I mean, it's just all about the playing. So really, from day one, the Foreigner songs have felt very natural to me because they were such a part of my DNA. And they still do in the same way. I think they're great songs. The audiences react so well, and the band is so good that it's a fabulous gig.
So when Mick Jones first stepped away, did you have any reservations on what fans or critics might think that the last original guy was gone? Or,
Well,
I mean, it's obviously proved that it's not a, a big deal to most people.
Well, you have to understand it sort of happened in phases. When it first happened in 2011, we didn't have time to even think about it. We just had to instantly kind of self-correct. And I was very proud of the way we did. Mick walked away with very little interruption in the flow of what was going on. But by that point already, especially Kelly and Tom Gimbel and I had a very close bond with Mick that for several years by that point. And so he kind of entrusted us to carry it on and be good to the legacy, which we do. We all, not only do we love Mick, but we love his legacy and his vision for the band. And we've always put that as a priority in preserving that. And I think Mick trusts that, or at least he's come to. I'm sure he had his own doubts at points, but yeah, I mean, it's been, like I say, it's in phases. And his leaving, his not touring kind of happened slowly over time. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I ever had reservations. I will just say that I had a wake-up call as to how important it was going to be to stay firm with the vision. And I think we've done that, and I'm very proud of how we've done that. And, I think the results speak for themselves.
Well, stepping kind of out from it and looking at it from a fan perspective, is it as wild to you as it is to us that Foreigner is just now nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the first time after when it should have been a long ass
Well,
time ago?
pretty funny because we always knew that there was an obstacle to us getting into the Hall of Fame. And now the obstacle has been removed. So, and it's kind of ironic that as soon as the obstacle's removed, the first year we're able with, or the first year that the obstacle is gone, we suddenly get nominated. So that's great. I think it's a wonderful thing. Yes, it's long overdue. But I'm really happy for all the original guys because I really think the world of all the original guys. I really do. And especially for Mick, who I think deserves this so greatly. But all of them do. I mean, they're all fabulous people. And even there's a couple of posthumuses in there, and they were both really sweet people that I'm really hopeful that this happens for them because they well deserve it.
Well, another band that is long overdue is Styx, and you guys are touring with them this summer with John Waite as well.
We
Like,
are indeed.
do you love big package tours like this? I mean, obviously it
Sure
brings in
do.
bigger crowds,
Yeah, of course. I mean, God. Yeah, I'm really excited. I mean, we love the Styx guys. They're an amazing band. They're just an incredible band live. And I'm really excited about John Waite because I love his voice. I love a lot of his songs. I'm not familiar with every single album, but I mean, I love his voice and I love his work. So, I think this is going to be a really cool tour. And yes, I am excited about package tours like that. They're fun, because generally they're with friends.
Absolutely. Besides that, I mean, do you have other plans like going into the fall, or like is that like once the Foreigner tour wraps up, like what's on your table?
Well, yeah, I mean, my schedule is going to open up a lot in 2025. So I'm hoping, finish Black Swan, maybe do more. We'll see about End Machine and Revolution Saints. I mean, I think they all are going to be working in 2025 as well. So we'll see. I mean, I just want to keep making records and keep making music. There's Foreigner music to finish that I'm hoping we do in 2025 because Foreigner's not going away. We're just not doing the long tours anymore.
Love everything you've been doing, and I appreciate your time with me today.
Thank you so much for this, man. It's been great. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
There you go, Jeff Pilson. A huge thank you to Jody Best of Best Bet Promotions for her ongoing and continued support of this podcast throughout the years. And of course, a massive thank you to Jeff for taking some time out there to sit down and talk to me on Zoom about The End Machine, Revolution Saints, Black Swan, Foreigner, Dokken. As you heard throughout that, all kinds of stuff. Hopefully, I can have Jeff back on at some point because there's a lot more we could have talked about. The guy's got a great perspective. He does all kinds of stuff. Like we mentioned, all those things. I mentioned off the top that he even mentioned in there he produced Last in Line. He has been in Dio. He, of course, has been in great things like Steel Dragon. That's something that didn't even come up. I'm sure he gets asked that stuff from dorks like me on podcast or interviews all the time, though. So, anyway, if you're not familiar with Steel Dragon, you should be. They're the quote-unquote fictional band from Rockstar, which features Miljenko Matijevic on vocals, not in the movie itself, which is where Jeff Pilson shines as both. I believe he recorded, the Steel Dragon music, but then also acts in the movie as the bass player. But then Millie from Steelheart did all the vocals, and I had him on the podcast about a year ago, early last year. Quite an honor. Massive fan of that guy. So bringing that all together, if you're a fan of Dokken, you're a fan of Jeff Pilson throughout the years. My guess is you probably like the 80s era of rock. And that's one thing that throughout the years, you know, this podcast has always, you know, I mean, as you see on the tagline, it's hard rock, heavy metal. You know, we never, when Jason and I started this, we didn't pigeonhole it into one genre, one area of just metal or just hard rock or just 80s or just modern stuff, whatever. You know, we're fans of all rock music, so we just left it broad. And that's allowed us to, you know, have on bands from the 80s, you know, that were like a quote-unquote hair band, and have on a band that was a thrash band, and then have on a groove metal band, and then have on a alternative rock band, and then have on a new metal band, and then have on a modern, you know, radio rock band, and then have on a death metal band, then have on a country singer, you know, just every once in a while I'll throw some curveball in there, you know. And that's what we wanted to do, and we, I believe, over 9 years accomplished that greatly. You know, if you look through the previous list of guests on this podcast, but I mention that to say that even though that's what we did, if you look at the guest list throughout the years, the genre that dominates it, I believe, is the 80s rock genre, because that's where Jason and I both, quote-unquote, cut our teeth on rock and roll. I use that phrase because I know Jason used to use it. We, you know, got into the stuff in the 80s because that's the age group we were, you know, when we started getting into music in the mid to late 80s. So all that stuff was prevalent. So, speaking of, besides now, Jeff Pilson, let's think of some of these artists that have been on this podcast. Vivian Campbell from Def Leppard, Dio, and Last in Line. Frank Cannon from Tesla has been on here multiple times. Brian Wheat from Tesla. Jeff Tate, formerly of Queensryche. Dee Snider of Twisted Sister. Gene Simmons of Kiss. Bruce Kulick, formerly of Kiss. Bill Leverty of Firehouse. Robert Mason and Joey Allen of Warrant. Reb Beach of Winger, Whitesnake, and Black Swan. Tracy Guns of LA Guns. Jack Russell of Great White was just on this podcast last week for the first time. Mark Kendall of Great White has been on here twice in the past. Let me think. Members of Lillian Axe, Tyketto, Trickster, Kix, Mark Slaughter has been on here multiple times. Robin McCauley, like I mentioned there from Black Swan and the McCauley Shanker Group, has now been on here 4 times. The list is great, people. I've also had on guys from thrash metal, like I said earlier. Megadeth has had on a few members. Testament, Alex Skolnick has been on here. Toxic Holocaust, Battlecross, you know, super heavy stuff. Like I said, Trevor, you know, rest in peace from the Black Dahlia murder. Allegion, bands like that. Bands like, you know, modern stuff like Shinedown, Saliva, Trapped, Three Doors Down, Hellstorm have all had members on here. So just delve into it. 391 episodes previous to this. The most recent ones, like I said, Jack Russell of Great White fame, Gus G of Firewind and formerly of Ozzy, Brian Tatler of Diamondhead and now of Saxon. Biff Byford of Saxon has also been on here. Can't forget that. Glenn Hughes of Deep Purple and Black Country Communion has been on here a couple times. Hey, a highlight of my life. All right, once again, be on the lookout for these new episodes featuring Living Color, Keith Wallen, members of Mirroth. Super stoked about all these. And once again, a huge thank you to Best Bet Promotions, DEB Concerts, Sunset Tattoo, and Jeff Pilson. And until next time.
Thunder Underground, y'all.